where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Because I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden chance to make my way. And with a golden ticket, it's a golden day.
Ah, yes, the golden ticket. We're going to get vouchers, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be wonderful, and all, every kid's going to have that golden ticket that's going to get them into the best schools possible, and they're going to have a leg up on the neighbors, and it's going to be fabulous. At least that's what we're led to believe. Yet what we've seen across the country, the whole golden ticket ideology, not really working out all that well. In fact, there have been studies recently that said, you know what, actually these vouchers are actually worse than the public schools, and I guess we kind of knew that. But here to talk a little bit about it is Mitchell Robinson. He's written a great piece on Betsy DeVos and really Michigan, titled Privatize, Monetize, Weaponize, How the DeVos Family Devoured Michigan Schools. Mitchell, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So Michigan's kind of like, for me, the little laboratory, if you will, what this woman, who is now the Secretary of Education, wants to bring to the entire nation. Tell me, how's it worked out so far?
Well, it's more like a little shop of horrors, I'm afraid, than a laboratory. It's been a pretty much crashing failure. Mrs. DeVos has a real interest in vouchers. She's tried to ram that through the state legislature at least once and lost 69 to 31%. Michigan still does have a prohibition against paying for private and religious schools with state tax dollars because of the Blaine Amendment. So it was unconstitutional. The thing that really amazes me is that she had the political power, money, and will to even get a vote for vouchers before the state legislature, knowing that it's unconstitutional.
Now that's an amazing thing as well. But to me, someone who has absolutely no education experience, who has really no qualifications, and it did show in the confirmation process, how she became Secretary of Education, again, just well beyond me. I guess it comes back to the money.
Well, I think with Mrs. DeVos, all roads lead back to the money. She's not in this for improving learning. She's not in this to help poor children or all of the other rhetoric that we hear. She's in this for two reasons. One is that she sees this as a business investment, and two, there's a strong religious foundation behind her moves. She's been quoted a number of times as saying that her goal is to return the church, and really her church, to the center of social life, where she believes public schools are right now, and that she believes that education should be furthering what she calls kingdom game. So this isn't about learning. It's not about education. It's not about schools. It's not really about teachers or children. It's about making some money, and it's about forwarding a religious view of the world.
Yeah, it's about tinkering with, societal stuff and pushing your agenda. And again, I like the way you put it. It was her religion, because I find that the people who push that kind of ideology only want their narrowly prescribed view to be the main, and everybody else, well, too bad on you.
Well, I suspect if there were a lot of Muslim schools that were popping up, Mrs. DeVos would have something to say about that as well. This isn't about religious freedom. This is about forcing your religious views, her religious views, on others.
And again, it comes back to, I've had a number of people over the years tell me that the ultimate goal is to get tax dollars into the hands of the homeschool, the religious-based homeschool folks, like the Quiverful Movement people, basically filling their coffers with tax dollars as they pump out their army of God, if you will.
Well, I happen to be an education researcher, and it's been interesting to watch the past 6 months or so. A lot of really interesting research has been released on the effects of vouchers. And in each of the three cases I'm thinking of, what's even more profound is that the groups that are doing the research are conservative think tanks. So the fact that they're coming out and saying that vouchers are not having this positive impact on student learning is even more shocking, given that the research that they're doing is being funded by conservative foundations and folks like Betsy DeVos. And you can read between the lines, and sometimes in the lines, they're not very happy about having to report these findings.
Right.
The biggest findings lately have been that vouchers are not being used by poor children. They're being used primarily by upper middle class folks, and in increasing numbers in states like Pennsylvania and Indiana, they're being used by relatively wealthy white middle class persons who have already been sending their kids to private schools.
Yep.
So vouchers, for, in the most case, are really government subsidies for people to attend private and religious schools. And that's, you know, government subsidies, that's not a conservative principle.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and we've been talking about that for a very long time. In fact, a couple of years ago, I had one of the state senators on who was pushing the vouchers, and I asked him point blank, if I get this golden ticket, if I get this wonderful voucher, I can go anywhere. And he said, absolutely. I said, so if I want to drive my kid to Philadelphia and enroll them in the Abington Friends School, which is like $45,000 a year, the voucher is going to cover that. And he said, absolutely. And I'm going, really? $45,000 a year? And even he didn't realize that it's only a small portion of that, which, of course, I can't make up the rest of it, and most people can't. So it just becomes a windfall for people who can.
Well, you know, let's run the numbers for just a second. Let's say that Mrs. DeVos's children were still school age, which they're not, and she was moving to D.C. If she wanted to send her kids to the Sidwell Friends School, which is the kind of school of choice for a lot of presidents and cabinet members in Washington, D.C., the average tuition there is somewhere around $44,000, $45,000 a year. The vouchers that might be available, although they're on hiatus in D.C. right now, would pay maybe $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 in a good year. That leaves about $40,000 hanging out that a family would need to cover. You don't have to be a math major to know that poor families in Washington, D.C. aren't going to send their kids to the Sidwell School and come up with the other $40,000. The other thing is that private schools and charter schools don't need to accept everyone that applies. So when we talk about charters and or vouchers, rather, in school choice, the choice isn't the parent and the child having the choice. The choice is the school having the choice. So we're not really talking about choice. We're not really talking about making school affordable or breaking the tyranny of zip codes. We're talking about redistributing public tax dollars to wealthy bank accounts.
That's it. And we seem to be doing that really well. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Yep. We're here at Mitchell Robinson. He's associate professor and chair of the music education there at Michigan State University. Also a fantastic blogger. You can check out his stuff at MitchellRobinson.net. We'll get a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. But you look at this stuff, Mitchell, and this is not new. This has been a long plot in the making. This has been a lot of conservative money and a conservative power shouldering behind this, and really under the scenes in states. And one of the things I liked in one of your blog posts, you point to a video that came up of DeVos's husband back in 2002, I believe it was, basically saying, we got to do this, in a stealth fashion on the state level, and we're not going to get credit for it, but, it's worth doing. And I go, this has been what the conservatives have done masterfully, all of this stuff in the background, and all of this stuff, this organizing, this building with money and influence for a lot of years.
Well, I've been in Michigan now for 14 years. Mrs. DeVos has been a steady but kind of shadowy presence in the state. Everyone knows what she's doing, but it's like, nailing jello to a wall. You can't really pin anything down, because everything is being done through second and third level intermediaries. So, she and her husband have been very careful to stay below the radar. I think that was only reinforced when her husband had a humiliating loss when he ran for governor. I think they decided at that point that their ideas were pretty radical. They weren't going to be approved by a majority of voters, but they still wanted to get their agenda through. The best way they could do that was to use their money, and that's what they've been doing very well. Behind the scenes, shadowy, non-transparent.
Which is interesting, because you've got an entire Republican Party that's all on the voucher train. And on the other side, you've got a good number in the Democratic Party who they're on the voucher and charter school train of getting public money and destroying the local public school. You've got a good portion of them as well.
Well, this is one of the kind of shameful secrets, I think, that's now come out into the open, is that there's, at the national level especially, so senators and above, the two parties really are not all that different on education policy. Cory Booker, who's a Democrat from New Jersey, is just as kind of toxic when it comes to his views on education is Betsy DeVos. So you're absolutely right. Both parties share a lion's share of the blame here. The good news is that at the state level, Democrats and Republicans are very different. And at the state level, you're much more likely to see Democratic representatives, senators, and congressmen at the state level who understand what good, solid public education can do. They establish and they maintain and support good policies. But you're right, at the national level, we need to clear house a little bit.
But what do you say to the person, and I've got a couple of African-American friends who say, look, you know, you look at the inner cities, and I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland where, to be honest, the local public school was in shambles and disarray, and the funding was terrible. In fact, when I was going to school, they were busing kids all over the place. What do you say to that person who's going, look, you know, the public schools are struggling. They don't have nurses. They don't have librarians. They don't have desks or books or any of this stuff. There's a shiny new charter school that I can send my kid to. There's hope and there's opportunity. What's the response to them?
Well, I think, you know, there are basically two things to say. The first thing is that they're absolutely right. That the situation that they're sending their kids to in many cases is not acceptable. And what we need to do is to come up with some solutions that actually work instead of trying this bait and switch over to charters. The second thing is I would ask them, with all kinds of respect, to ask themselves why their public schools are in that kind of shape. I happen to live in a nice suburb outside of Lansing, Michigan, because my wife and I, who are both teachers, we could afford to live there. We have a certain amount of privilege, and we spent it on living and buying a home in a place with excellent public schools. So I absolutely understand what they're saying. 6 miles away in the city of Lansing, that's not the case. But when I talk to parents whose kids go to Lansing schools, I ask them, why do they think there's such a great disparity between the schools in the suburb where my kids go and the city where they go? And the truth is that our state government and our federal government have systematically defunded those urban schools. And so what we need to do is, instead of responding just to the situation in front of our nose, is ask ourselves some hard questions about why government has left these public schools unfunded, unmaintained. They're right. It's a shameful situation. But taking your kids out and putting them into a charter school that's not doing any better of a job educating them isn't fixing any kind of a problem.
Right, but here we are in this Hunger Games of education, if you will, in many urban areas. And, you know, parents want it. They want to do what's best for the kids. They want them to have a better opportunity. And when you're thrown one lifeline that looks a little bit better, I can see how people are drawn to it.
I can see, too. Here's the problem with wanting their kids to do better. The numbers just don't prove it out.
Right.
What happens is that when kids move from one school to another, there's an inevitable school transfer issue that comes up. So kids don't do better. So what happens is, in many cases, those kids move back to the public school. And in the most insidious cases, and this happens in the National Heritage Academy charter schools in West Michigan, the kids are moved out, are expelled out after count day, after the state tax money, the foundation grant, comes to the charter school. The charter school will expel kids that are more expensive to teach or have special learning needs or special ed issues. The charter school will expel those kids back to the public school. So the solution is like if you had a leak in your roof, you wouldn't leave your house and buy a new house and leave the leaky roof behind. The solution is to fix the roof. What we need to be doing here is putting more money and more attention to the urban public schools and rural public schools. Our suburban public schools are doing fantastically well in most cases.
Right, but here's the thing, and this is where I've gotten these arguments thrown back at me. If we make those schools better, it's going to cost our kids, and well, we can't have that, because this is how we've divvied up the education money in this new Hunger Games.
Well, right now, they're right. There's an apartheid system of public education that has been built, and what we need to do is go back and ask ourselves some questions about what the purpose of education is, about what the purpose of public schooling. We shouldn't be segregating our schools, and in fact, charter schools and private schools are increasing the rate of segregation in our schools. So everyone's going to have to work together to make this problem improve.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, what do we do? I mean, we're now finally coming awake, I think, as a society, that this has been a 30-year march by the right wing to destroy public education, probably even a little bit longer than that. But this has been the plan all along. And look, they're way ahead of us in the race. What do we do?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting to listen to conservative and Republican talking points. Whenever someone like me says that we need to spend more money on education, I inevitably hear this talking point that we're not going to solve any problems by throwing money at
right.
them. And my response is always, well, you know what? Let's try. Because
exactly.
we haven't been doing it for about the last three decades. So it's amazing to me that when we want to improve the military, we spend more money. When we want to improve border security, we spend more money. But when we want to improve education, we're supposed to spend less money. The truth is that I've been working in higher education for the past two decades or so. Public universities used to be funded 80% by the state and federal government and 20% by foundations. It's now exactly reversed. And we're on the same track in public education, where public schools are having to go out and do fundraisers to pay for basic educational needs. And we need to get back to a spot in our government and in our societies, communities, where we're willing to pay for excellent public schools for every child. Right now, we're not.
Yep.
And that may be an unpopular message, but that's the truth. We need to put our money where our mouth is. Every parent I know says that they value education for their child, but not everyone's willing to pay for it. We need to be willing to pay for it.
But here's the thing. This is where we go back to our tax code. I mean, the DeVosses of the world, the Gates of the world, the wealth class that we've created by lowering taxes for them has basically been at the expense of our kids and our infrastructure.
Sure. Well, I mean, look at the roads you drive on. Look at the bridges that you use. I'll tell you one thing that would change it and fix it right away is instead of running two parallel public school systems, which are regular traditional public schools and charter schools, if we got back to funding one public school system, that would help a lot.
And that's probably not going to happen because we've got the competition fetish people going, no, we wouldn't need competition, even though we know.
That's another favorite conservative talking point, and my response to that usually is that competition and choice are not going to solve the problems that have been created by competition and choice.
There you go. Mitchell, I appreciate the time. Great piece. I hope people will take a look at it. Great talking to you.
Thanks so much.
Always great talking to you. Mitchell Robinson. Again, you want to check out his piece, Privatize, Monetize, Weaponize. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Red roses too. They're blue for me and you, and I say to myself, oh, the wonderful world.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.